Welcome to Viewpoint, a TD Securities podcast. Listen in as we draw perspectives from a variety of thought leaders on key themes influencing markets, industries, and the global economy today. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Welcome to episode 17 of Viewpoint, a TD Securities podcast. I'm your host, Amy Van Arnhem, Managing Director and Head of Canada Senior Relationship Management at TD Securities. In recognition of International Women's Day, I have the pleasure of inviting Sharon Kim, Executive Managing Director and Regional Head of Europe at TD Securities, to join us. As Region Head of Europe for TD Securities, Sharon is in charge of setting the strategic direction for both the UK and the European continent. Sharon brings over 25 years of industry experience. Since joining TD Securities in 2006, she has held increasingly senior roles and has served as co-head of Global Foreign Exchange. Sharon has been intimately involved in TD Securities' diversity and inclusion recruitment efforts and served on the board of Women in Leadership Executive Committee and is actively involved in the firm's women and technology community. In 2019, Sharon was also awarded the Women's Executive Network Canada's 100 Most Powerful Women distinction in the Trailblazer and Trendsetters category. So it goes without saying that you have an extremely impressive background, and I am very honored that I get to speak to you today to commemorate International Women's Day. You're not only an amazing mentor to many colleagues at TD Securities, but you're also a respected and admired businesswoman and leader. And I just personally have learned so much from you over the years. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I kind of jumped at the opportunity when I heard that you were going to be hosting this, because you and I have a rapport and a good history together.
Yes.
So I think we're going to have fun over this particular podcast.
Yeah. And this topic, too, is near and dear to both of our hearts, and obviously supporting women in leadership roles at TD Securities. So maybe just to start off with, I think it would be really interesting for the listeners to hear a little bit more about your career path and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So, you read out that I've been in the business over 25 years, so I can back it up a little more than 25 years to talk about how I ended up in this business. My undergrad was, I thought I was going to go to med school. So I was doing, you know, Orgo and physics and so forth. And I got to the end of my undergrad and wrote the MCAT. I wrote the dentistry exam as well, wrote the LSAT. And then I decided that each of those fields were a little bit too narrow for me. Too narrow for somebody who had not yet made a decision on what she wanted to do with her life, because it felt like an MBA was the broadest of some of those sort of professional schools or master's programs, so that I could continue to keep the options open. Ended up doing financial engineering, which was sort of down the middle for me because I had a strong math background. Mm-hmm. And it was during my MBA program that I made some friends with people who were doing co-ops at large trading floors, like Citibank, CIBC, and it was sort of the, what's that? And it suddenly felt like this career path was an amalgamation of a lot of the things that I was good at and things that I liked. So immediately applied to all the rotation programs in Toronto. And so from there, it was a very typical path onto a rotation program, not at TD, different Canadian bank, and spent a couple years sort of in the trenches, so to speak. The funniest was on the hottest days of the year when it was like 35 Celsius outside, they would send me for soft serve ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, a desk of like 16 at the time. So you'd come back with like ice cream down your arms. And, like, your arms are shaking because it's so heavy. I very quickly moved to a different bank, a French bank, thereafter, and worked as an option structure on the FX side. And that bank closed all their Canadian trading operations, and I ended up unemployed. This was late 2005, early 2006. And somebody had introduced me to Moti, my former boss, who was previously head of capital markets at TD Securities, and he hired me on the spot.
Wow.
Which
you must have made an impression.
Well, it was also some time ago. I don't think we do stuff like that anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
We usually have a more thorough intake process. And so he did hire me on the spot and put me on to the institutional sales desk. I was a VP at the time, and I was actually running that.
Is that in foreign exchange?
Foreign exchange, which again, I don't think we'd do that anymore. I don't think we'd take a VP and give that much responsibility. But it was really fortuitous. It was just ahead of the financial crisis. And TDE was just an amazing place to be during the financial crisis. The clients were tripping over themselves to face TDE. And so we absolutely ran with that opportunity. And of course, we told all our bosses, it's us. It's not our credit rating. And so I was really able to build a profile during those years. And since then, I've just been asked within foreign exchange to take different, slightly different mandates, variations on this theme. So took on corporate sales, took on commercial sales and retail and wealth, and then we globalized the role and then added the trading piece into it. So I've been very focused on product. And then about 6 months ago, somebody said, region.
Yeah.
And I was asked to take on the European region for TD Securities, which is London and Dublin. Okay. And so I landed in seat about 4 months ago. And it's been a whirlwind since then.
Well, yeah, and I am going to get to some questions around how that is going for you. But I would like to take it maybe back a little bit, because one of the things that you said to me in the past was when you started sort of in the first role you were in, but even the subsequent roles, you were one of a very few women. And so I was hoping just you could speak a little bit more about how you navigated that and, you know, what were some of the key things that you did that allowed you to reach the success you've reached?
Sure. So I would say early in my career, I was really not conscious of being a woman, which sounds sounds contradictory, but I really was not focused on the gender piece whatsoever. Mm-hmm. In fact, I really didn't think about it until I became a people manager. So as long as I was a single producer, it was all about getting the job done, you know, proving yourself, showing that you can do a good job, getting all the sort of the technical acumen under your belt. And then, like I said, I think that the tipping point came for me when I realized that I had influence in making hiring decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's when you have the ability to change the numbers, ultimately. I think the other piece, whether I was junior or as I became a people manager, is always putting the business first. Mm-hmm. As opposed to me or my career path. I've actually never really had to worry about my career path. It's always what's best for the business. So in other words, always strategy first. And I think that's sort of helped me through and really cut through any of the, like I said, some of the gender sensitivities.
Well, I think it is important. That's important advice for people to keep in mind as well. I mean, there is that balance, right? Of you want to support diversity, but you also do need to keep your head down and focus on getting the raw skills you need to be able to be successful. So it is finding that balance. So that's interesting. And as a people manager, when you moved into that role, how did things change for you? And then how did you sort of take that more diversity lens and try to encourage that within your business?
So I've been pretty vocal that I'm very interested in moving the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that was one of my responsibilities as a people manager to influence that and really shape the business. And so I'm quite proud that, you know, when I left the foreign exchange business, we had the highest representation of women of any product group in TD Securities. So I've been very focused on the numbers and the representation. I think that the industry as a whole has done a tremendous job, and especially TD Securities, on that really sort of organic good intention. And there is a lot of goodwill and support, but now we need to find traction. And so I have been known to do things such as really push my recruiters or my headhunters, bring me X percent of women. I've put a lot of pressure on my directs as well, and they know it. Mm-hmm. But your year-end evaluation is going to be a reflection of how diverse your teams are and the decisions you've made through the year to do that.
Yeah, well, I'll speak from personal experience. I sat within your management team for a short period of time before you moved your roles. And there was such a huge group of talented individuals and talented leaders. And you could really see that focus from them. You could really see the inclusive nature and the culture that you've built in that business. So
I can say like I applaud you for that because I did notice it.
Yeah, so that's really gratifying. And I mean, I totally know that I was pushing on them and that when you're reporting to somebody, you want to please them. And so they were, I think, going the extra mile.
Yeah. So I just changing gears a little bit and talking a bit more around your mentorship and coaching that you've done in the past. And this will be sort of the last question that we sort of really hone in on women and leadership. But what is the best advice you could give to women that are pursuing their careers and to the next generation of female leaders, not just in the capital markets business, but just more broadly?
I would say keep your head up. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is we do have a tendency, again, in the early part of our careers to be head down, get the work done, gain the technical expertise, show how productive you are. You need to get your head up and take a look around, look at where the industry is going, look at where your organization fits within that path, where are the regulations moving, where do I fit in this? In other words, get your head up and be strategic. And I think, I wish I had been more strategic earlier in my career. I think I was very focused on production. For me, the being strategic part of, actually is the most gratifying part of the job.
Yeah.
And I think, again, if you always put the business first and the business needs, then things tend to work out.
Okay, so changing gears, I want to go back to what we were talking about before, which is your new appointment. So first of all, congratulations. You were appointed as region head of Europe at TD Securities. And so I want to hear a little bit about how that transition has been and, you know, how your responsibilities and strategic direction sort of changed since taking that role.
For sure. So I was approached, like I said, about 6 months ago to take over the European region, and I was shocked. This is not something that we talked about months or years in advance. This came out of left field. So it did take me about 24 hours to process it, and really stupid things went through my head. Like, who's going to water my plants? You know, I can't go. but once I came out of that stupor, I recognized that just an amazing opportunity. There's so much potential for TD Securities in Europe and on the continent in particular. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that my new boss, Riaz Ahmed, had said to me was, I need you to set a strategy for Europe. Yep. And I looked back at him blankly. I was like, what do you mean set a strategy for Europe? Like, don't we have a strategy? And he repeated, set a strategy for Europe. And I was like, holy crap, I need to set a strategy for Europe. Really what he meant, and what I learned very quickly, is that in this post-Brexit world, every bank that is not already domiciled on the continent had to hurry to stand up a legal entity because just about everybody was focused on activity out of London. So in everybody's knee-jerk reaction, everybody stood up entities. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the foresight, clearly. Nobody did. It's not unique to us to know what Brexit actually meant.
Right.
But it truly is a division covering the European continent from Europe and covering the UK from the UK. Mm. And so we've stood up this entity, and it's we're at this point where it's now what? What do we want to be when we grow up in Europe? So that's what we mean by setting a strategy for Europe. And so really what I've been spending the last few months is, I think the strategy for Europe really is the sum of all the different businesses that want to be domiciled there and being able to stitch it across the top and create a great narrative for that. And of course, it's not just the narrative stitched across the top. It is if the businesses want to go to a particular point, what is the infrastructure? What is the legal entity type? What are the capital models? What is the balance sheet that they need to support that? So how do we underpin that aspiration? It's tricky because the goalposts of the regulations are still evolving.
Okay.
And so we might get something right for the next 2 or 3 years, but what if the political mood music changes and in year 4 or 5, it's completely wrong? So we have been particularly sensitive to creating scalability and optionality in our plans. But it's also a very expensive endeavor. So we need to make sure that this all makes sense for us. As you can imagine, you don't just stand up a bank.
No.
in a new city just because you feel like it. There's a lot of regulatory engagement along the way. You know, having said that, we've got a great track record with our regulators. We're clearly a reputable bank. We clearly have a very strong credit rating. And so I think that is what we bring to Europe. And I think the opportunity set is just enormous. You know, I think we're a strong, our brand is as a strong U.S. dollar house, and there is a need for that. There is a need for highly rated banking entities as well. And on the macro front, there are, you know, I see a couple major opportunities or trends that are unique to Europe that we want to participate in. And that is namely the ESG revolution, mm-hmm. which is sort of paired with the digital revolution or the twin transformation. So I just think that in addition to all the sort of the contours of the secular trends in the macro environment, those in particular, I think we want to be involved in as well.
Can you go back to what you said, which was the ESG and digital? And can you talk a little bit more about what that actually is and what excites
yes.
you about it?
Yeah. So it wasn't obvious to me when it was first explained to me why it's a twin revolution.
Yeah, that's where I would like some good.
So we do know that Europe is on the forefront of the ESG, the climate transition in particular. Yes. In order to manifest that, in order to push that, you're going to need a digital capability. So here's a really easy example. You have a house that needs double insulated windows or double layer windows. How are we going to know that you've actually improved your house? There has to be some sort of digital surveillance. Tracking, for example, or your smart house, you know, we can read or record the amount of energy it uses to heat a home. So it's very much around pairing of the two because you can't evidence one without the other.
So digital is helping to essentially monitor and help evolve the ESG. Yeah. So it becomes a pairing. Yeah. Interesting.
Or when you talk about charging your car, but you can put some back to the grid.
Right.
That would be a digital requirement.
So it's hard to separate the two into, they start to almost become dependent, yeah. interdependent on
yes.
each other.
I mean, I guess you could say everything is dependent on digital anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. It sure seems like it.
So, but yeah, I think, and for the banking environment, there are some really interesting ramifications. For example, if you pledge your building as collateral mm-hmm. on a particular loan, the quality of that building may or may not degrade, may or may not be upkept. But there are going to be regulations that require the upkeep. And so your collateral may corrode. We have an eye on pieces like that as well okay. for the banking environment.
That's interesting. So what you mentioned quickly around just sort of the macro environment, but maybe just speaking to the markets and what you're expecting for the UK and the European markets just generally.
So I think we're in a little bit of a, I don't know if you call it a honeymoon period on growth, where we've had clearly quite a bit of tightening around the world. But the numbers, they've softened a tiny bit, but they're still relatively robust. We've still got pretty hot inflation. We've still got pretty hot growth to the point where people are, what I think, misconstruing the idea that we might dip into a recession. What I think it is that it typically takes 18 and more like 24 months for tightening to manifest. So we're still not there yet. So I actually think that 2024 is going to be where we feel more of the pain.
Okay.
But we're enjoying that, like I said, the honeymoon before things drop off.
Okay.
But, you know, we've had, about 450 points of tightening just in the U.S. alone. We still probably have another 40 points before terminal, and that obviously keeps moving. Europe has also had, you know, tremendous change on their policy rates. And again, we haven't seen the implications yet. I think the trouble comes in 2024. In the meantime, I've been fascinated by, it's not just that we as a market have been all over the place on trying to predict terminal, but the shape of the curve in particular. For the last year, the market's priced a really peaky terminal rate, mm-hmm. get to terminal and just drop off very quickly.
Yeah.
We're starting to flatten that plateau a little bit, but I still don't think it's flat enough. I don't think people are recognizing how long rates are going to have to stay high. You don't automatically flip over. You need, you know, several quarters mm-hmm. of data to manifest before you make that decision. So I think that is also going to be a future drag. I'm not typically a pessimist. I just think that we've been in a period of zero rates across all curves for so long. And so if you think normal or the way you've been trained has in a zero rates environment, I think we have some really interesting, I think fun trading conditions ahead. You know, having been raised in an exceptionally volatile period, this feels like normal to me.
Okay. You're comfortable here.
I think, yeah, like I said, there are going to be amazing opportunities on the trading side because we finally have differentiation, whether it's across curves, across regions, across products. Yeah. It's not all beta, 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Well, interesting. I have one final question for you. I mentioned before that for a very brief period of time, I reported into you. And I just want to know if I'm your favorite all-time employee.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. But no, in seriousness, thank you so much for joining today. This was a great conversation, and I appreciate your candor, as always, and your insight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Viewpoint, a TD Securities podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to this series on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast platform. For more thought leadership content, visit tdsecurities.com and follow us on LinkedIn for all the latest TD Securities updates. For relevant disclaimers to this podcast, please refer to the Viewpoint episode page on our website.